Good morning, everybody, and thank you for being here to share the Dharma together. And a special welcome to guests and seminar participants from yesterday. Let me say a couple of words about a teisho. A teisho is not a talk or a sermon in the usual sense. It is not meant to convey information. A teisho is a Japanese word meaning a shout. And it's an attempt by the teacher, with greater or lesser success, to express the Dharma as clearly as possible, as clearly as one can do in words. So, in listening to a teisho, just open your heart and your mind and let it in. Let it flow through you like the wind. Don't try to analyze or judge or even understand in the usual way. Just let it be. During the teisho, if you need to shift your posture, that's perfectly fine. But please do so quietly and unobtrusively. And however you sit, try to keep the back straight and the head up. There are two aspects of our practice that are unique to the Zen sect. One of these is Doksan, the private interview with the teacher. I know of no other sect of Buddhism where this one-on-one interaction between student and teacher is available on a regular basis. Here's what Yasutani Roshi has to say about Doksan. This is from Three Pillars of Zen. Without this individual guidance, we cannot say that our practice of Zazen is authentic. If we compare Zazen to a journey on which some start rapidly and then slow down, others begin slowly and later accelerate their pace, some find one phase of the journey more hazardous than another, and all carry different burdens of luggage, that is, preconceived ideas, we can begin to understand why individual guidance cannot be dispensed with. Yes, there's no one-size-fits-all in a spiritual journey. If you're setting out into completely unknown territory, it only makes sense to consult a guide. Working regularly with a teacher in Doksan helps the student to stay on the path. The great pitfall in self-directed practice is that one can spend years wandering about in the bushes and grasses of delusion, chasing after thoughts and concepts about enlightenment, rather than focusing clearly, accurately, and consistently on the practice. Doksan with a teacher helps the student to stay on track and to maintain a high level of interest and commitment. And I might add, it also keeps the teachers on their toes. The other unique aspect of Zen is the koans. Koans are, for the most part, short accounts of the sayings and doings of the great Chan masters of ancient China, although some are drawn from the sutras and other sayings of the Buddha. Each koan presents the student with a paradox that makes no sense to the discursive intellectual mind. Its purpose is to force the student to abandon thinking and figuring out and see directly into the koan without preconceptions and filters, and then to demonstrate the koan in the Doksan room without resorting to explanatory words. Robert Aitken referred to the koans as the folklore of our tradition. And as with all folklore, the actual historicity of the stories is less important than their efficacy in opening the Dharma eye of the practitioner. Most koans are ambiguous, allowing for different answers. There is really no one correct answer to a koan, any more than there is one correct cup of water in a river. The important point of the koan, and what the teacher looks for in the student, is the transcendence of the separate self by immersing oneself in the koan. A very good example of an ambiguous koan is a case from True Dharma I, the 300 koans of Master Dogen. This collection is not part of our koan curriculum in the Sanbo Kyodan lineage. Nevertheless, they are well worth looking at. Although Dogen is credited with bringing Soto Zen to Japan, and he emphasized Shikan Taza, just sitting, he also used koans extensively in his teaching, something that I have been told is only recently resurfaced in the Soto tradition. True Dharma I, case 128, Baizhang's Gate of Essential Nature. During a work period at his monastery, Baizhang Weihai was plowing the ground. A monastic heard the sound of the drum ending the work period. At that moment, he held up his hoe, burst into laughter, and went back to the monastery. Baizhang said, "Wonderful! This is Avalokiteshvara entering the gate of essential nature." After Baizhang returned to the monastery, he sent for the monastic and asked, "What did you see to make you laugh like that?" The monastic said, "I was hungry. As soon as I heard the drum, I returned to have the noon meal." Baizhang laughed. Baizhang, whose dates are 720 to 814 of the Common Era, was a Dharma heir of the great Matsu, along with Dharma brothers Nanchuan, Damei, and the layman Pang. His lineage through Wang Bo, Lin Ji, and Wu Men reaches down to us in this Sangha. Those who have worked on case number 2 in the Wu Men Guan will remember him as the one confronted by the mysterious fox monk who asked him, "Does an enlightened person fall under the law of cause and effect or not?" There's an exchange between Baizhang and Matsu in which Baizhang has great realization. It's recounted in case 53 of the Blue Cliff Record. Once, when Matsu was out walking with his disciple Baizhang, he saw a wild duck fly past. Matsu said, "What is it?" Baizhang replied, "It is a wild duck." Matsu said, "Where has it gone?" Baizhang said, "It has flown away." Matsu then twisted Baizhang's nose. Baizhang cried out in pain. Matsu said, "Has it indeed flown away?" That's the case, but there's a sequel. When Baizhang returned to the monk's quarters, he began to cry. His fellow monks asked him why he was crying, and he said, "The great master twisted my nose, and I'm still feeling the pain." The monks then asked Matsu about this. Matsu said, "He understands it perfectly well. Go and ask him." So the monks went back to Baizhang and told him what Matsu had said. Baizhang burst out laughing. The monks asked, "A moment ago you were crying. Why do you laugh now?" Baizhang said, "I cried then and I laugh now." Crying and laughing, laughing and crying. People react to great realization in many ways. Some cry, some laugh. Others, like Baizhang, do both. Still others may not react much at all. Just, "Oh, so that's what it's all about." During a work period at his monastery, Baizhang Weihai was plowing the ground. Baizhang was plowing the ground. The great master Baizhang worked in the fields along with all the monks. If anyone recognized the importance of samu, work practice, it is Baizhang. Many here have heard the following story. As Baizhang grew old, he lived to be 94, he still worked every day in the fields. His monks worried that he was overdoing it and not getting enough rest, but he insisted on continuing to work. So one day they hid his tools. The next day, Baizhang did not eat, and he didn't eat the day after. In desperation, the monks gave him back his tools, and he went out into the fields and worked as before. That evening, he gave a teisho. A day without work is a day without eating. Now, this is not just a story about morality or economics, the rule that we must all earn our daily bread, as true as that is. A day in which we do not fully engage our practice, our work, our lives as practice, is a day of spiritual starvation. Baizhang needed that work in the same way we all need our zazen and our practice on and off the mat. Working in the fields was not just about maintaining the self-sufficiency of the monastery. It was samu. A monastic heard the sound of the drum ending the work period. At that moment, he held up his hoe, burst into laughter, and went back to the monastery. So this monastic is out there, working hard all morning, along with everybody else, sweating in the hot sun, hour after hour, hoeing weeds, digging little channels for irrigation, and so on. Anyone who has done what we euphemistically call agricultural day labor knows what that's like. There comes a point where the world fades away. The person fades away. There is only this weed to chop, this cabbage to cut, this piece of fruit to pick. That is the nature of samu, just doing. The layman Futasher, whose Japanese name is Fudaishi, said, "Empty-handed, I hold a hoe." How does one hold a hoe with empty hands? Was this monk holding a hoe with empty hands? What was his state? In just that steady, slow chop, chop, chop of the hoe. Suddenly, the drum sounds. Boom! 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 What happened in that moment? Xiang Yan was sweeping around a gravesite. A rock struck a bamboo stalk. Tuck! And he came to awakening. What happened in that moment? Wu Men heard a drum. A monastic heard a drum. Was it a drum? If not a drum, what did he hear? The monk holds up his hoe and laughs. What is that laughter? Baizhang cried and then laughed. The monk works and sweats and then laughs. Baizhang said, "Wonderful. This is Avalokiteshvara entering the gate of essential nature." What did Baizhang see in that monk? What did he see in the laughter? Did he see himself laughing all those years ago when he was with Matsu? When did this monastic, this Avalokiteshvara, enter the gate of essential nature? Was it when the drum sounded? Or had it already happened in the chop, chop, chop of the hoe? Samadhi is not in itself realization. If it were, I would have been fully enlightened at the age of 17 when I spent summers working in the peach orchards. We practice and let the mind become still and quiet and open. At that moment, anything can wake us up. The sound of a drum, the sight of a flower, a sprained ankle or a broken leg. But there's no guarantee. That moment of realization is a matter of deep karma. But without practice, without quieting the mind, the chances of any kind of awakening are slim to none. And even if one does have a spontaneous experience, without continuing practice, it quickly fades to a pleasant memory that has no effect on your life. Avalokiteshvara enters the gate of essential nature, the gate of non-duality. One can say all sorts of things about this gate. Vimalakirti asked numerous arhats and bodhisattvas about that mysterious gate. All whom he asked came up with greater or lesser sets of words. Manjushri said, "To my mind, in all dharmas there are no words, no preaching, no demonstration, and no recognition. It is beyond all questions and answers. That is entering the gate of non-duality." Well, those are nice words, and they might work on an exam question in a course on Zen Buddhist philosophy. Now, there's an oxymoron if there ever was one. But when Manjushri asked the question of Vimalakirti, Vimalakirti just sat quietly. What was Vimalakirti's meaning? What was the meaning of the monastic's laughter? Are they the same or are they different? After Baizhang returned to the monastery, he sent for the monastic and asked, "What did you see to make you laugh like that?" He sends for the monk and quizzes him. "Is Baizhang having second thoughts? Let's check this kid out again and make sure." An important part of realization, or kensho, is the noetic aspect. To know and to know that you know. The spontaneous, nonverbal demonstration in Dokusan is primary. But then the teacher will often ask for words as well. After all, a fish in water is the perfect manifestation of Buddha nature. Every moment it swims through the gate of essential nature. But can the fish teach others? Can the fish transmit the Dharma? So Baizhang asks, "What did you see to make you laugh like that?" And the monastic says, "I was hungry. As soon as I heard the drum, I returned to have the noon meal." What sort of an answer is that? Has our monastic expressed his deep realization of the Dharma? Or did he blow it, falling into the secondary? Case number 15 on the Wu Men Guan reads in part, "Dongshan came to study with Yunmen. Yunmen asked, 'Where have you come from?' Dongshan said, 'From Jatu.' Yunmen asked, 'Where were you doing during the summer training period?' Dongshan said, 'I was at Postzu Monastery in Hunan.' Yunmen asked, 'When did you leave there?' Dongshan said, 'On the 25th of August.' Yunmen said, 'I spare you 60 blows. Yunmen clearly saw that Dongshan was stuck in the conventional world. But what about Baizhang's monastic? Is he stuck there too? Could you come up with a better answer? Be careful here." And Baizhang laughs. Is Baizhang's laughter the same as the monastic's, or is it different? Does that laugh contain poison? You wild fox, you haven't a clue. is Baijan laughing at himself? Oh boy, I really missed that one. Or is he laughing with and as the monastic as they manifest together the one mind? Everything about this koan can be looked at in so many ways. But you will never see into it clearly just by reading or even these words that I'm blathering on here. You have to meet this monk face to face. In order to deal with this or any koan, you have to meet the master, be it Zhaozhou, Baijiang, the Buddha himself, or this monastic in the field. You have to walk with him. You have to tangle eyebrows with him. And once you do that, once you have seen into the koan, you have to let that koan come forth from your own heart, concretely and unequivocally, before the teacher in the Doksan room. It takes persistence and some serious courage to go to Doksan time and time again and get wrung out with the words, "No, keep working," until one day you get it. And then you get handed the next koan. Not to discourage anyone, but there are some 550 koans in our curriculum here. It's not getting through a bunch of them and putting notches in your belt. It is just another form of practice. And even all that formal koan training is not the ultimate goal, if you can call it that. Every koan is a dharma gate into your life. With every koan, the Zen eye opens a little wider. In seeing into a koan, you see at least a little bit into the mind of the master. And eventually, you realize that that mind is Buddha mind and that it is no different from your own. Together with all beings, we realize the way.
Great vows for all.